Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking from homeless to debt-free with Anthony O'Neill.
Our guest today is Anthony O'Neill, who has helped hundreds of thousands of people make smart decisions with their money, with their relationships, and education as well. Man, he is a number one national best-selling author of Debt-Free Degree and The Graduate Survival Guide. Anthony travels the country spreading his encouraging message to help teens and young adults alike to start their lives off right and to help people of all ages succeed with their money. A part of that message is in the ability to pursue passions while living a well-balanced life. We're all about that balance here at How to Money, and we're excited to hear Anthony's story as well as how college students and young adults can avoid the crippling effects of debt. So Anthony, man, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Oh man, Matt and Joel, thank you so much for having me on. I've been looking forward to this ever since I saw that I was invited on the show. So again, thanks for having me.
Us too, man. Yeah, we're really excited to chat. And Anthony, one thing Matt and I absolutely love, we love to drink craft beer. And so when we do the podcast, oftentimes, most of the time, we're having a delicious beer while we're doing it. And so today we're drinking a beer called Coastal Sunshine by a brewery called Humble Forager. And so that's like kind of our splurge, right? That we're spending money on in the here and now while we're also trying to save and invest well for the future. So our first question to every guest, our first question to you is, what's your splurge? What is the thing that you spend money on now while you're also trying to be wise and thoughtful about saving money for the future?
Oh man, that's a good question. Shocking. I do not drink beer, but I am a golfer. So I am a member of a private country club here in the beautiful city of Nashville, Tennessee. And so, you know, that's a lot of money a month. But at the same time, I actually enjoy it because I meet other millionaires, other successful people. And while they're drinking beers and playing golf, I'm maybe having a cigar and playing golf and asking questions and learning from them. So I splurge a little bit on the golf world. So that's my splurge, man.
Private clubs are not cheap.
Yeah.
Anthony, I grew up in Augusta, so I grew up surrounded by golf. And actually, the Masters, they are, making that tournament happen this fall, which is really cool.
Yes.
But yeah, private clubs, man, they are expensive.
They
I'm glad you know, though. Like, that's for me and Matt, it's all about intentionality. And if you're like, man, there's a reason for it, this moves the needle for me, then putting your money there, it makes sense. And I think, you know, oftentimes the world personal finance, we can get a little judgy. And it's like, oh, you're not doing it right. But as long as it's something you're doing intentionally, then it's totally cool.
Absolutely.
Plus, I mean, you can probably write off some of those expenses as like business networking, right?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, a little bit of it, not all of it, just a little bit of it. But
yeah, just a touch.
Yeah, just a touch. Definitely can't write off the cigars. Can't write off the alcohol. but
right,
it's a great little splurge that I have on a monthly basis.
I love it. All right. Well, let's kind of dive in here. Let's start talking with. Let's talk about your college experience.
Yeah.
You know, like you had college paid for with scholarships.
Yeah.
And your father's GI Bill. But a couple of things happened when you got to campus that really upended your whole college experience. Can you tell us about that some?
You know, it really wasn't a couple of things. You know, it was really just one thing, and it was myself. You know, I got onto the college campus. I had a lack of financial education. My parents taught me two important things growing up, which were, they were all great parents. I love them dearly, but they had, the very first thing was, hey, here's how you obey the law as far as in get home safe and sound. And the second conversation was, here's how you obey the spiritual laws. I was raised up in a very strong Christian home. So their philosophy is, you know, hey, we don't want you to go to hell. We want you to go to heaven. And so those are two important things. We never talked about budgeting. We never talked about how to build wealth. We never talked about what is a credit score. We never talked about how to manage a checkbook. So when I walk into the college campus, I'm getting hit with all these individuals saying, hey, sign up for this credit card, sign up for this credit card. And I'm thinking, if I'm going to be a man, I need to have a credit score. In order for me to have a credit score, I need to have a credit card. Hmm. So the very first guy that jumped out in front of me, offered me two free large pizzas and a free t-shirt. I was like, yeah, let me do it because, I mean, I want to be a man. And I am a man now, so I need to get this
and
credit
card.
And
I want some pizza.
Right.
You know, I mean, come on.
Especially the two free large pizzas. But the true story, which I hardly tell people, is that out of the two free large pizzas, I only actually had one slice of the pizza. Oh, all my peers ate them that night when we went home.
You're
I did have
guy.
The t-shirt. Yeah. So, but you know, about a month later, man, my mom told me I had some mail at the house. I go home, I check my mail, and you know, my mom and I noticed that I received my very first credit card. And she was like, hey, you don't need that credit card, son. You need to stay away from that. No, don't do it. And I was like, mom, I got this. I'm a grown man. I racked up that credit card within a matter of 13 to 14 hours. I spent $150 at Red Lobster. I spent $150 on 1-800-Flowers.com and then spent $200 on a Dooney and Burke's purse. So that whole $500, I spent it to impress a female. I can't even remember her name today. And I made the small little payment back then. I think it was like $35 and some change. And a month later, this bank sends me back a letter saying, hey, thank you for the first payment. We've upped your limit from $500 to $1,000. And within a matter of an hour of me getting that letter in the mail, I maxed out that $500, that extra $500.
Wow.
Yeah, I went and put a $500 sound system in the back of my black on black 1987 Nissan Maxima that could not even go in reverse. So, you know, the sound system and the spinning wheels on the car were actually worth more than the actual car. And so during that whole season of my life, Matt and Joel, I now at the age of 36, I can sit here and honestly tell myself that I did all of this. I racked up $15,000 in credit card debt, $10,000 in student loan debt when I didn't even need the student loans, and $10,000 in furniture bills just to impress my peers, just to impress the ladies, just to be liked by individuals who I'm not even in a relationship with today. No friendship, no dating ship, none of that stuff today. And I make a poor decision, again, trying to impress friends. And unfortunately, that decision cost me my college experience. And when I lost my scholarship, when I lost the college experience, I lost a job that was attached to my college. And when I lost that job, I lost the income I was using to pay rent, to pay my bills. And so when I lost the income to pay rent, I thought I was going home. But the key word there was thought. You see, when I went home, my father met me at the door and said, since you think you're a grown man, you made all these decisions, and a grown man lives with the decisions that he made. So go live with them. And I did just that. I called all my peers who I tried to impress. Not one of them offered me a couch to sleep on, a bath to take a bath in, a table to eat at. Not one. Half of them didn't even return my phone calls. The three guys I got in trouble with, their parents wouldn't allow me to come over the house because we all were in trouble for the poor decisions that we made. So at the age of 19, not only am I $35,000 in debt, but I'm also homeless, sleeping in the back of my car off of Highway 76 in Oceanside, California, sleeping in my car, in the backseat of my car at a Walmart. And I'm sitting here just depressed. I'm sitting here like, wow, the spiritual faith side of me was like, God doesn't love me. The physical side of me was like, my parents don't love me. My friends use me. Why am I here?
Yeah,
I thought about committing suicide.
Wow, my goodness. So that one interaction with the person on campus that was dishing out the credit cards just completely derailed everything and led you to massive depression, homelessness, all that stuff. So how in the world did you climb out of such a desperate place?
You know, it was the backseat of my car. I will never forget this day. I told myself, you know what, you made these poor decisions. And there was at a point in my life to where I had to realize that the caliber of my future will be determined by the choices that I make today. And I said, I'm going to make this choice. And the very first choice was I had to take ownership of the decisions that I made. And I did just that. I went home. I told my father and my mother, said, hey, I made the poor decisions. I am ready to become a man, but I'm not a man today. Father, pops, can you help me grow into that man? And my father said, yes. He gave me a Dave Ramsey budget form. He said, you're going to get on the budget. I said, well, Dad, I don't have any money. He said, I know. That's the next thing. You're going to get a job. And I got a job. Got a job working 8 to 5. And then in between 5 and 7, right before the sun will go down, I'll go wash cars. And then at nighttime, from about 2 a.m. to about 5 a.m., I will go deliver newspapers. And I did that for 2 or 3 years just so I can pay off all my debt, because I was sick and tired of living paycheck to paycheck. I was tired of looking like I have money, but didn't have money. I was tired of going out to the beach with my friends in California, and we all have nice cars. We all have the spinner wheels back then in the early 2000s. We all looked good, but we were not good. I wanted to be and grow true wealth, not look like I'm rich. Yeah. And so that was the season that shifted myself to saying, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I got on a clear vision. I got on a clear path. I lost some friends. I gained some better friends, and I stayed the course. Have I made all the right decisions since then with my money? Absolutely not. I've made mistakes. Even recently, I've made mistakes with money. But the key thing here is when I fail, I learn. When I learn, I improve. When I improve, I grow.
Yeah, that's so good. Such a nice little synopsis of your entire story. You know, you kind of go through that pretty quickly here, but we know that, you know, you certainly had some hardships and a lot of emotion and a difficult time as you kind of worked through that. So, you know, like you mentioned your dad, it sounds like he played a pretty pivotal role to kind of help you to get back on your feet from a mental standpoint. And he allowed you to learn how to handle your personal finances. Not everybody has somebody in their life like that, right?
Yeah.
So obviously for him, Dave Ramsey, you know, the baby steps were important. That was a big part of how you were able to turn around.
Yep.
How would you recommend for just a lot of folks out there, just across the spectrum, how do folks learn how to handle their money without making some of the mistakes that you did?
Well, the key thing is when it comes to learning how to handle your money, and I say to be a good steward with your money, is to have a plan for your money. I believe that where there is no vision, that's where people perish. And I believe it's the exact same thing when it comes to our money. Where there is no vision for our money, that's why we have holes in our pockets. That's why we wake up on Tuesday when we just got paid on Friday saying, where did the check go? Well, you didn't spend it on paper first. So the very first thing that I'm always telling people is to have a vision for your money. And that's a budget. You know, get on an app called Every Dollar, list all of your income, list all of your expenses, and at the bottom of that budget, make sure it's zero. That's called a zero-based budget. So that's the very first thing. Then after that is have a vision. You know, where do you want to go in life? What do you want to do? Do you want to be a homeowner one day? Do you want to purchase a car one day? You know what? You know, do you want to get married one day? You know, Matt and Joel, my parents were so broke that they didn't have a wedding. They were so broke that my mom didn't have a ring until 3 years into her marriage. They were so broke that we never took a family vacation. Mm-hmm. I've never been to Disneyland. I don't know what Disneyland or Disney World looks like. Spring break, I had to get a job because our family was living paycheck to paycheck. I got one pair of shoes a year. I remember one time I didn't get a pair of shoes for 2 years because my parents were living paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. So a part of my vision is that I want to make sure that when I do get married, that I'm on a complete opposite side, that I don't have any debt, that I can buy my kids shoes, that I can give my wife not just a ring, but a beautiful ring, that we can travel the country, that we can take our kids and create memories. And that's my vision. And that vision keeps me on track to be a good steward with my money. Keeps me from avoiding debt, and it keeps me to going after building wealth, and not just wealth, but generational wealth, wealth that I can leave to my kids' kids.
I think that informed vision is such a huge thing that most people, when they're trying to get their money together, they don't have one.
Yeah.
And Matt and I, we call it the why behind our money. Yeah. And that's one of those things that you have to develop that. That's almost one of those first steps in order to then starting to get your money right. I think that's great advice, Anthony. Hey, we've got more questions for you. We want to talk about paying for college. You learned a lot and you have a lot of wisdom to give when it comes to paying for college and cash. Let's get to some of those questions right after this break.
All right, Joel, we are back from the break and we are talking with Anthony O'Neill. We just heard about his story. And so, Anthony, let's talk some about paying for college. You know, have you changed your mind about the value of getting a college education since COVID started specifically?
Well, no, since COVID started, I haven't. I believe that education is one of the most valuable things that we can have. I think every single day we should be learning. Now, how we get the education, I know that's where me and other experts have different opinions. I don't believe everyone needs to go to a four-year university. There's nothing wrong with going to a community college, to a trade school, going into the military and getting education that way. Or you know what? going into the workforce and using YouTube to get the education. My key thing and my stance is you need to decide what is the best route for you. Identify that route and you go that route. If that's going to a four-year university, you go. If that's going to a community college, you go. If that's going to a trade school, you go. My only hard stance is do not borrow a dime to go to any school that you decide.
Yeah, yeah, you're very, very firm on that. So we want to dig more into that. You actually wrote a book called Debt Free Degree, and you give kind of step-by-step process to help people graduate without taking on student loans. And there's obviously this like political debate in the country right now about the student loan debt crisis. Should we be forgiving all college debt? We don't necessarily want to get into that conversation. But your take is essentially that high school grads should be avoiding all of that debt in the first place. So like, what are your best tips for how people can pay for their college education with cash?
The number one thing is we talked about this bit earlier on in the show with having a vision when it comes to your money. Have a vision for your life. You know, that's the very first thing that I'm telling everyone. If you want to go to school debt free, the very first thing is don't just jump out there and just do anything. No, identify. If you want to be a school teacher, okay, you need to have that vision and you need to look up that process. Or let's say, for example, you want to be a carpenter. Now, do you have to go to a four-year university to be a carpenter? Or what if we want to be a welder? Do you have to go to a four-year university on that? Absolutely not. So number one is get a clear vision. Then number two is your school choice. Now, your clear vision is very important, but the most crucial thing when it comes to going to school 100% debt-free is your school choice. So let's break this down. Let's say, for an example, you go to an in-state school. Let's say right here in Tennessee, our average in-state school is going to run you about $10,000 a year if you stayed at home and you just did tuition. So $10,000 a year is $833 a month. You can work part-time, working 10 to 20 hours a week and go ahead and afford that $833. So you do the research. Now, if you go out of state and you live in Tennessee, you're going to be paying anywhere from $30,000 to $50,000 for another in-state school because you're out of state. And so the school choice is the most crucial one. I don't have a problem with you going to Harvard. I don't have a problem with you going to Yale. I don't have a problem with you going in-state. I don't have a problem with you going to community college. I just have a problem of you picking a school that you're going to have to pay debt for. Everyone says, hey, y'all, my dream school is Yale. Well, okay, cool. Is Yale going to give you a scholarship? No. Okay, can you afford to pay for that cash? No. So then your dream school shouldn't be Yale. Your dream school should be a school that you can go to debt-free and graduate debt-free. So number one, get on a clear vision. Number two, your school choice. Number three, do research. Okay. Let's say, for an example, you want to go into one particular field. I want you to do some research in-state and out-of-state. And here's why I say out-of-state. For an example, if you go to the state of North Carolina, if you go to UNC Pembroke, UNC Pembroke has a program to where if you're accepted into their school, your tuition per year is only $1,000. So you can get a bachelor's degree tuition-wise for $4,000. Wow. If you're accepted into the program. If you're out of state, for an example, you're only paying $2,000 a year. And so now you're looking at $8,000 for a bachelor's degree. And that is even cheaper than some in-state. Yeah. So I'm always telling some people, do the research. See what opportunities are out there. And that's one thing that I'm always telling people to do. Don't look for a hookup. Look for a way to not miss out on an opportunity. And the only way to do that is to do the proper research. And then the last thing that I really, really stress is be willing to work. Be willing to put in the hours as a college individual. If you can put in 10 to 20 hours a week, you can afford a school in between $800 to $1,000 a month. And then when you're working, not only just work as far as an hourly pay, but you know what? Work on campus. Be willing to go in there and maybe serve on their social media team. I've interviewed several young people who are like, you know what? I'll do the social media for the college. And it was, okay, cool. We'll give you 25% off of your tuition plus free dorms. Or, you know what? Hey, nice. We'll just knock off 40%. So work from a hourly pay and then work with your school to see how you can get discounts from there.
Nice. Yeah. So, essentially you're talking about just some of the different ways you can pay cash for school. You're talking about working. You're kind of talking about finding some of these specific deals that some of these colleges are offering. Like, how else would you recommend for folks to find additional money that's out there? You know, yeah. Like, what are your tips for finding money?
Well, here, for finding money, I want them to go to, there's two websites, well, there's three resources. The very first website I want them to do is go to my website, anthonyoneal.com. I have a lot of scholarships on there, and that's specifically for high school students and some college students. You'll be able to find some scholarships there. Another great resource that offer for everyone, for high school students, and they specialize in the category of current college students to adults, is MyScholly. Go to MyScholly.com. You can find some great scholarship resources there. And then there's a book that I just recommend everyone get every single year, because they update their scholarship book every school year. So not calendar year, but school year. And it's called The Ultimate Scholarship Book. And this one will be 2020 to 2021.
Okay.
So every August, they update the book to the current school year. And so the key thing I love about my website, anthonyneal.com, is not only will you get to be able to find scholarships, but you're going to have a college calculator on there. We're going to tell you what you can afford. Here's the amount you should do. Here are the schools that's in that bracket, that's in your budget. And here are the schools you need to stay away from. But we're going to give you some great suggestions and really help you walk through the whole math process on my website.
Gotcha. Well, so another quick thought, like, who do you think should be getting these scholarships? Because I think a lot of times individuals might have it in their mind where they think, well, I've got some money, you know, like I've got a 529 that my parents saved up, or like this is a college I can afford. And so they think that they shouldn't be applying necessarily for scholarships, even though it might be available to them. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I think anybody and everybody should be applying for scholarships. I don't care if you're a millionaire, if I don't care what kind of income you have coming in. Any high school student, if you put in work and if you work hard, apply for it. You know, the money is out there. Billions of dollars go to waste every single year. And I'm going to tell you the secret to these billions of dollars that go to waste. It's the small ones. It's the $500, $1,000, $250 scholarships that people are just going to waste. And another one that I just did this most deep dive research on is your minority scholarships are going to waste. Now, when I say minority scholarships, Matt and Joel, check this out. I'm not talking about black people. If you are a white person and you want to go and get a bachelor's degree, you can get a minority scholarship by going to a HBCU. So if you go to a historically black college and university and you're white, you are the minority. You qualify for a minority scholarship. So a lot of these scholarships are going away because every HBCU has a certain amount of scholarships allotted to allow white people to come. But white people do not come, which I can understand why they do not, because they feel a little fearful, maybe because it's a HBCU. But there's a lot of opportunities out there. But again, it goes back to what I said earlier. Do the research. Look up all the programs. Look at all the opportunities. See how you can squeeze into it. See what you can squeeze out of it. And that's the key thing there.
Nice. I think Joel's going to enroll at Spelman to kind of get that PhD.
Spelman.
Right. I mean, dude, I could use some more education, that's for sure.
Hey, man, I hear you on that one, man. I mean, but you know, there's a lot of great HBCUs out there. You got Morehouse. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff. And so, and one of my good friends here, he serves on the board at Fisk University, and they just had a white person come in, and he said, hey, man, this white guy came in there and he's killing the game. A full ride. We paid for everything. He's getting the education and the people are loving it. And so I just think, again, be willing to be uncomfortable. When I say uncomfortable, as far as in put in 2 hours a day looking up scholarships, be willing to go places that other people are not willing to go to look for opportunities and resources, because it's the uncomfortable part of you that's going to create some amazing opportunities. If you're comfortable, you may miss out on some great things.
Do you have any thoughts on what that conversation looks like with a high school sophomore or junior or senior who's kind of starting to talk to their parents about where they want to go to school? And it's out of the price range. But that can be emotional, especially for a kid in their teens. So how should a parent approach that conversation as they're trying to obviously hear their kid and hear what their kid wants, but at the same time kind of give them the nuts and bolts of like, well, this is where we're at. This is like the scholarships that are being offered. And this is kind of the financial picture. And we don't want you to take on a bunch of student loan debt that's going to weigh you down for years to come.
Yeah. You know, with me not being a parent, I can only imagine that conversation. My son coming to me and saying, hey, Dad, I want to go here, but I don't have the financial resources to send him there. So I can understand the emotional attachment to that. Here's the thing that I tell parents, though. Take the emotions away and really give them the facts and the practical. Here are the facts, son, that there's $1.7 trillion in student loan debt, that there are nearly 44 million individuals who are living paycheck to paycheck because they are in student loan debt. The average person is going to graduate by $35,000, and a fifth of these young people are going to graduate with over $100,000 or more in student loan debt. So that's someone who has a mortgage payment but doesn't own real estate. Mm-hmm. I do not want to co-sign on you taking out student loans to get an education that's supposed to help your future and help you get towards your dreams. But the truth of the fact is you're not going towards your dreams. You're walking into a nightmare. So, son, here's what you and your mom or your parents, here's what we can do as parents. Here's what you need to do because this is your life. And if this is the budget, this is where we're going to stay true to. Now, here's the last thing I'm saying. I'm looking at my son. I'm looking at my daughter in their eyes. And I'm saying no college makes you. You are no less than someone who went to Harvard. And someone who went to Harvard they're not better than you. I know several people who went to a prestigious school, but they're not prestigious individuals. Mm-hmm. And so if you go in there and you live with intentionality, you be a young man or a young woman of character, and you make use of all the opportunities at any school that you go to, you can come out and be just as or even more successful than someone who went to this prestigious school. I think as parents, we got to just really be bold, be firm, and be loving and say, you know what? Hey, here's where we are. We can't do this, but it doesn't change your future. And we're not going to set you up to fail. We're going to set you up to win. But also make sure that young person feels the weight. Like, okay, this is on me too. It's not just on my parents, but this is on me. If you have that conversation in a very heartfelt way, that young person will be okay.
That's so good, you know, that the pedigree doesn't make the person. And yes, these are some wise words in regards to school. We're talking about college here, but we're going to take a quick break. And after the break, we're going to talk about personal finance and just some principles that can apply to everybody. And so we'll get to that right after the break.
All right, we're back from the break. We're talking with Anthony O'Neill. And Anthony, man, I saw a recent video that you posted on YouTube about dating on a budget. And we talked earlier in the episode kind of about maybe some issues with the ladies and how that messed up your budget, right? And then it caused you to go into credit card debt. Yeah. So, like, what are your tips? So what do you think about when it comes to dating? You're still out there in the dating world. Yeah. For our listeners out there who, you know, aren't married and they're looking to they're in the dating scene, that costs money. Like, how do you start to budget for dating?
Yeah, dating is expensive, man. And let's just be real. And I think I could have done a better job at probably articulating my thoughts in that video a little bit. But I firmly believe that on your line item, on your budgeting, there should be a line item of dating. And as far as, and if you meet a young lady or if you meet a young guy and you all want to go out, you should have here's the most I'm willing to spend throughout this month. Whether this is going to a movies, whether this is going out to eat, whether we're just going to get maybe a drink. It doesn't really matter. There should be a line item on there, and you should not go above that. And I think any wise person that hears you say, hey, I'm on a budget and I'm sticking to the budget, they should know that you are a good steward of your money. And that should be a more attractive than someone says, yeah, we could do whatever. Exactly. You want to go over here? Yeah. And so a lot of ladies who I have dated over the last 4 years and 5 years of me being single, it has turned some of them away. And I was talking to my pastor the other day, and he was like, man, I think that's a good thing, that your principles make you unattractive to someone else who do not have the same principles as you. So when you do meet someone and she says, oh, I like that, that means you all share the same values, the same principles. And that would actually go further. And so, I just recently met a young lady who I am interested in. And all one right. of the very first things she said is, I'm debt free and I don't do credit cards. And I was like, well, look at you. And she was like, and I saw your viral video, and, you know, dating on a budget is cool with me because, you know, hey, that's what I want. So I think when you have a clear vision in dating, this is where I want to go. I date with the purpose of marriage. I'm not going to spend this kind of money. I'm not here to impress her or him financially. I don't have to have the Gucci bag. I don't have to have, you know, the real expensive stuff. And there's nothing against the expensive stuff, But at my season, man, and this is what I tell every young person. I'm actually about to do a show about this on my show. On here are the top 10 things you need to be doing in your single life. We have such a great opportunity to get ahead of the game in our single life. And I think that we should be living way below our means in our single life. So that way we can do so much with our spouses, so much with our kids. But the last thing you want to do, I'm going to speak from my perspective, Matt and Joel. The last thing I want to do is look at my wife and say no to her because I said yes to all my girlfriends. So I'm willing to say no to all of my girlfriends so I can say yes to my wife, so I can say yes to my kids. And so I think that as long as you have a clear vision, stick to a budget, live below your means, pay off all of your debt, make sure you have a fully funded emergency fund. Those are the things that I think every single person needs to be doing with their money at this time.
Anthony, I want to talk about the wealth gap here for a minute. Yeah. The Pew Research Center, they show that the difference in median household income between white and black Americans, that it has grown to about $33,000. This is measured back in 2018. And so what do you feel can be done to fix that?
You know, here's the very first thing I'm always telling to close that wealth gap between whites and blacks. And this is let's be real, not just whites and blacks, but whites and all the other minority races, is to focus on the things that you can control, you know, not what we can't control. Systemic racism is real. But let me tell you what else is real. Success. When you put in work, success leads to success, okay? And so I look at myself. I don't come from a wealthy background. I come from a family of four parents, two biological parents and two step-parents, two siblings, living paycheck to paycheck, having to eat, waffles for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, having to eat eggs sometimes and eat rice and beans. You know, we were there. And so one of the key things that I've learned for myself is if I'm willing to put in the work, work hard and smart. Here's the key thing there, not just work hard all the time, but be willing to put in the work and be successful and surround myself with mentors that are teaching me how to get out of this and close the gap for myself. That's cool. I can't close the gap for all black people to white people, but what I can do is close my gap. I can build my wealth. And one of the key things to closing that gap is I just live way below my means. I don't spend more than I make at all. You know, I live off of about 52% of my income. I give 10% to my local church. I give 10% to a nonprofit. I invest 15%. And so my mortgage payment is right around 18% of my bring home pay. Like, I live way below my means. So this way I'm creating margin. I have room for emergencies, and I have room for when I do get married, I can go up on my living expenses a little bit because I've been living way below my means.
Yeah, it leaves room for emergencies and opportunities, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm very big on, you know, multiple streams of income. And so, you know, if I find a good opportunity, I can invest into like a small business. I do that. But I can do that, though, because I do not have any debt. And so that's another thing. If we're going to close that wealth gap, is you got to take debt off of the table.
I heard you mention a mortgage. So is that something, I know, like, I love how passionate you are about people not having debt. And Matt and I, you know, for the most part, we don't want people to have debt either. Like, debt sucks, and it holds people back. Yeah. And it does prevent people from being able to achieve some of the things they want to achieve. But yeah, what is your take on a home mortgage? And especially with interest rates being so insanely low, is that one of those things that you advise people against too? Or is that something that you're cool with people taking on?
Get it. I mean, get it. The mortgage is the only thing that I am okay with people having. As long as it is a 15-year fixed rate and you're putting down a minimum of 10% to 20%. If people listening right now say, you know, I got an FHA and I put down 3.5%. Okay, cool. Great. I'm cool with that. But what my suggestion is, pay off all your debt first. Go ahead and get a fully funded emergency fund. And then we look into saving for at least a down payment to get a mortgage. And I recommend in a 15-year fixed rate, no ARMs, no adjustable rate mortgages, no 35, 40 years. I want you to get out of debt as soon as possible. So my suggestion is always 15%. I mean, 15-year with at least 10 to 20% down.
Yeah. We'd love that 20% down, avoiding that PMI at the same time.
Yeah. That PMI, it gets people, man. That extra, you know, $300, $400, $500 is not going towards your principal or interest. It's just wasted money. So why do that?
It's just, it's the cost of basically having a house before you can afford one.
Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly.
I like that one, brother. Okay, you may hear that again on my show.
Yeah, we have really enjoyed this conversation. We know we want to be respectful of your time as well, but it sounds like folks can find you at anthonyoneal.com. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Anthonyoneal.com. They can find me on YouTube and Instagram, IG, at Anthony O'Neill on both of those.
Awesome. Well, Anthony, dude, it was a great conversation. Thanks so much for joining us on the show today. We really appreciate it.
Hey, Matt, Joe, thank you all so much for having me on, man. I got to get you all on my show, too.
Hey, we'll make it happen. We look forward to it.
Yes, sir. Let's do it, man.
Joel, what a fantastic conversation we just had with Anthony. It was just amazing to hear his story, but then just to hear some of his practical advice as well when it comes to our money. And so, man, for you, what was your big takeaway?
Yeah, I think I just appreciate Anthony's attitude and just kind of his approach to all this too, right? Like, he's energetic, he's thoughtful about it, and that all plays into the messaging and what people hear. And it's like, man, I can do this. Like, I can change my circumstances. Anthony obviously changed his in a major way. I think my big takeaway from this conversation was that pros still fail at money. Mm. One of the things that Anthony said was that he failed recently on a couple of things, and I appreciate the honesty, right? Like, but at the same time, he said, when I fail, I learn. And Matt, you know, you and I, a lot of people would consider us money pros, right? Like that we've got it all figured out and we've got it all together. And, you know, we do care about money a lot and we read a lot. We try to be thoughtful when it comes to our money. But that doesn't mean we don't screw up too, like that I don't make a thoughtless purchase from time to time, or that my money always reflects the why behind my money. Like,
sure.
It doesn't. There's times where those things don't align.
Yeah, sometimes we fail, but that doesn't make us failures, right?
Completely. Yeah,
like our identity isn't tied to those mistakes that we make.
Right. All we got to do, though, we have to learn from those mistakes.
Yes.
We have to learn from those failures. I think if they're things that we continue to repeat, it becomes something different altogether. But if we can learn from the mistakes and if we can realize that we're making them, then we can start to make changes moving forward. And so I appreciated his honesty. And I think that was probably my biggest takeaway from this combo.
Well, I loved what he said about saying no to his girlfriends now so that he can say yes to his wife off in the future. And when it comes to your money, man, that is such a great way of looking at it, right? He's not necessarily looking to impress right now, but he wants to make sure that he is putting himself in a great, solid financial position down the road when life really matters. A lot of our conversation revolved around him recounting a lot of the past mistakes he's made. And a lot of that involved trying to impress people that he doesn't even remember. He doesn't even remember their names, you know? And so, unfortunately, that can really come back and bite us in the butt. That can haunt us for years to come. In his case, I think there was 3 years of him working basically from like sun up beyond sundown. And he was delivering papers until like, you know, like 5 a.m. or something like that. Like insane hours. And that was the price that he had to pay in order to make up for some of those mistakes that he made early on. He learned from his mistakes, just like you said, Joel. But now he has learned from that, and he's saying no to the things now in order for him to be able to say yes more often in the future. I love that.
Yeah,
so good.
It puts the power back in our hands, and it's like we're not resigned to make some of the terrible decisions we make with money. We have that power in our grasp, right, to say no to some of those things that we want to say yes to today. It's hard. It's not easy, but it's one of those things that if we don't want to pay the piper on the back end, it's something that's important that we have to do. We have to be thoughtful about that.
That's right, but we're also not all about deprivation. We try to approach money from a very balanced standpoint, which is why every episode on the show, we have a beer. We have a craft beer because it's something that you and I both love. This episode, you and I are enjoying a Coastal Sunshine, which is a beer by Humble Forager. I'll read the can here. It says, it's a fruited smoothie sour with tangerine, passion fruit, mango, and soursop.
I don't even know what soursop is.
Me neither.
But I got to say, man.
But how did it taste?
This beer was delicious. It was like thick and it was juicy, and it definitely brought that smoothie vibe to the table. It was thick, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then so much fruit flavor bursting through. I don't know what soursop is, but whatever it is, I dig it, because all four of those fruits combined really just brought forth this incredible palette of fruit flavors. This is a beer I would be down to drink pretty much any day of the week, man. I really, really liked it.
Yeah, me too, dude. The first thing I noticed when we poured it was the color, because oftentimes we talk about how some of the New England IPAs that we have, how they're super hazy. Oh, it kind of pours like orange juice. No. This beer pours like orange juice.
Literally,
you could not see through it. Super orange, and certainly that's due to all the fruit that they packed into this beer. It did have a lot of body. You mentioned it was like a smoothie. 100% reminded me of drinking an, like a Naked Juice or an Odwalla, where I felt like I'm drinking a health drink almost. But at the same time, what was amazing about this beer is it had a lot of carbonation. And so it was really thick like that, but it had like this effervescence that I would not have expected out of a thicker, heavier bodied beer like this. It made for one of the most unique drinking experiences that you and I have shared on the show. I'm glad that Humble Forger, that they're making beers that we can now get down here in Atlanta. They recently started distributing to Georgia. So that's good news for us, man.
Yeah, after having this one, this is my first one from them. I'm definitely picking up some more. Like, that was a wonderful beer. So I look forward to having more Humble Forager beers in the future. Yeah. All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. For anybody out there listening, if you want show notes, including the links to some of the websites and helpful resources that Anthony mentioned while we were talking with him, just go to our website at howtomoney.com for those.
Yeah, and if you are listening to this episode and you have found our show to be helpful, but at the same time entertaining, we would love to hear from you. We would love it if you were to leave us a review over at Apple Podcasts. Honestly, anywhere you leave a review is great, but for some reason, Apple Podcasts, it seems to move the needle a little bit more. That's why we always mention Apple.
They're the king right now.
Unfortunately, they are. They're kind of like sitting at the top, and they're not doing much to like innovate and like bring much to the podcasting table. I don't know.
But they started it all.
Yeah.
And so that's the main platform still. So yeah, it does help anywhere you leave a review or just telling a friend, right? It helps us grow this podcast and helps us help other people think about their money in a more effective way.
Exactly.
And that's what we're going for. So all right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.